अनंत विजयं राजा कुंती पुत्रो युधिष्ठिरः नकुल सहदेवश्च सुघोषो मणिपुष्पकौ काश्यश्च परमेश्वास शिखंडी च महारथाः धृष्टद्युम्नो विराटश्च सात्कीश्च पराजितः द्रुपदो द्रौपदेयाश्च सर्वश पृथिवीपते सौभद्रश्च महारथ शंखं धनु पृथक् पृथक्। So you may wonder why I've chosen these verses to speak on. Then there's no explicit philosophical message here. Bhagavad Gita's philosophical exposition of the Absolute Truth by the Absolute Truth Himself. This is also called Bhagavad Gita, although chapter 1, Bhagavan is not speaking his Gita at all. It's introductory, setting the scene, observing the armies. It's Bhagavad Gita in the same way that Chatrinay or Amrana Kananayai, just like if you see many when walking with umbrellas, you'll say, there go the umbrella holders. Not all of them may be holding, but it's seen like that. Or if you see, this is a grove of mangoes. There may be other trees there also. So in the same way, this is not exactly Bhagavan's words, but it's included in Bhagavad Gita. So why did I choose this? Well, it's always nice to chant the verses of Bhagavad Gita, all of them. And particularly hearing the names of all these great kings, beginning with Kuntiputra Yudhishthira. But actually the names have been given before this. Who blew the conches first? Panchajamyam Hrishikesha Devadattam Dhananjaya. First of all, it's mentioned that Hrishikesh, Krishna. So many names of Krishna are given in Bhagavad Gita. So many names of Arjuna are given in Bhagavad Gita. Here we have two names. Hrishikesh, the Lord of the senses, Krishna. Dhananjaya, one of the names of Arjuna. So they're mentioned first. And then one whole line is given to Bhima Karma Vrikodaraha, to Bhima, who's also Bhima Karma. He performs terrible acts of, and he's wolf-bellied. Vrikodara means wolf-bellied. He means a glutton, which for anyone else would be an insult, but for Bhima, his Bhima karma is more than commensurate with his eating. So he eats a lot, but he works a lot. He does tremendous activities. So I've heard it said that Srila Prabhupada had said that you can also eat a lot like Bhima if you work like Bhima. So we're not meant only for eating. So they're mentioned first, and then after the king is mentioned. So you think, well, Yudhishthira, he's the most important. Yes, the whole battle is fought on his behalf. But actually the heroes of fighting are Bhima and Arjuna. The whole battle is fought for Yudhishthira. But then, and of course, ultimately, the Krishna for Krishna. Bhuktaram yajna tapas. Yeah, everything is fought for him, ultimately. And that's what distinguishes the Pandavas from the Kauravas. Otherwise, they both, in many ways, they had, well, all the brothers had the good quality on both sides of being loyal to the elder. Even though Bhima and Arjuna were in many ways as Kshatriyas more qualified than Yudhishthira. They were known as better fighters. Definitely Bhima was more physically strong than Yudhishthira. He was legendarily strong. And that was accepted by everyone. That's why half the food was always given to Bhima. And then the other four brothers plus Kunti, what they took, and the same would be given to Bhima, the same amount. And we see when they were fleeing from the fire at, what is that place called? In the wax house, yeah, lac house. I can't remember exactly. Vatanava, something. So they were all exhausted, and Bhima just picked them all up. Four brothers and one mother, and just ran with them all. So he was exceptionally powerful. And Arjuna was exceptionally skillful in the use of arms. But they all respected Yudhishthira. We don't hear so much in the Mahabharata about Nakul and Sahadeva. In the fight, in the battle of Kurukshetra, they also engaged in some fights. But mostly it's Bhima and Arjuna described. And at the end, Yudhishthira killed Shalya, and then the battle was more or less all over. So even though Yudhishthira was not the most powerful, but the brothers were all completely loyal to him. But on the other side, the brothers with Duryodhana, they're also very powerful. And we don't hear much about the other brothers either. Dushasan we hear about somewhat. He's the second brother and the right-hand man of Duryodhana. We hear a little bit about Vikarna. His name is mentioned here in the list of fighters. And he's the good guy among the sons of Dhritarashtra, because at the Asat Sabha, at the meeting where the gambling match took place, Vikarna, he stood up and he echoed Draupadi's question, "Is this dharma to drag me? Is it proper to drag me like this in front of all these people? Could Yudhishthira actually lose me? Could he wager me after being lost himself?" And Vikarna stood up and said, "Come on, all you big guys, you answer this question. Do you have any answer?" Her question should be answered. So Vikarna, even then, he remained loyal to Duryodhana's forces, thinking, "I'm the brother." And Bhima had vowed to kill all the sons of Dhritarashtra, which he did. But when he killed Vikarna, he did parikrama of his body out of respect that he actually knows what is dharma. He's fighting for Duryodhana out of duty, but he doesn't respect him. There was one brother one other brother of the Pandavas, of Duryodhana, who was not counted among the Dhritarashtras, the sons. He was the son of the Vaishya wife, Yuyutsu. So at the beginning, actually from childhood, he was always partial to the Pandavas. Maybe his own brothers, they disrespected him because his name Yuyutsu means eager for fighting. But he may have been disrespected by his brothers due to being born of a Vaishya wife. So we see that, for instance, when Bhima was poisoned by Duryodhana with enough poison to kill 100 men, then Yuyutsu informed the Pandavas, but it was too late. Bhima had already eaten the food. But anyway, he was just a boy. He just digested it. That's Bhima. So at the beginning of the fight, Yudhishthira, he announced, anyone wants to join my side, you can join now. He may have thought Vikarna may come, but Yuyutsu came. He said, if you'll accept me, I'll come. But basically, among the Kauravas, there was unity. Among the Dhritarashtras, the sons of Dhritarashtra. They all followed the brother. That principle was there. And Karna also had great loyalty. He was like another brother, like a younger brother to Duryodhana. So much so that before the battle, when Kunti approached Karna secretly and said, actually, you're my son. So why don't you join Yudhishthira and then you'll be the king. You'll win definitely if you join Yudhishthira's with you not on that side. That'll be a great loss for the Kaurava army. And if you come to our side, then definitely you'll win and you will be the king. And Yudhishthira, he's not desirous of the kingdom for its own sake, only for the sake of dharma. So all the brothers will respect you as the eldest. And Karna said, no, I cannot, because all this time Duryodhana has supported me, so I have to support him. So that sense of loyalty was there, unity among the brothers. Now, in the case of the Pandavas, that was very good. In the case of the Kauravas, it was not good. Because the Pandavas were devotees of Krishna and Duryodhana was envious of Krishna. So good qualities are in relation to Krishna. And good qualities not in relation to Krishna become bad qualities. To be loyal to Duryodhana is not a good quality. Just like Vibhishana, he was considered a traitor, a turncoat. He turned against his elder brother. But if your elder brother is Ravana, you'd better turn against him and go over to Rama. Don't support Ravana, even if he's your elder brother. That we should learn. So Vibhishana is glorified for turning against his elder brother. Now, in the case of Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, Shatrughna, Kaikeyi was expecting that Bharat would turn against Rama and take the kingdom. She had engineered a situation in which Rama was banished, and she thought, now my son can be the king. But Bharat wouldn't have anything of it. He rejected his mother because she rejected Rama. So loyalty is very good, but who should we be loyal to? That should be considered first of all. We should be loyal to Krishna, to Rama. We should be loyal to Yudhishthira because he's loyal to Krishna. So family unity and loyalty, that is very good, but we have family loyalty to those who follow Krishna. Otherwise, to remain loyal to someone who's not a devotee of Krishna, that is not a very good quality. We may be thankful to them that in this lifetime we had the opportunity to have a human birth via the agency of the father and mother, but that human birth becomes actual human birth when we take to the service of Krishna. Otherwise, ahara nidra bhaya maitanam cha samanyam etat pashubhyam naranam dharmo hitesham adhiko visesham dharmena hina pashubhyam naranam. Otherwise, eating, sleeping, mating and defending fathers and mothers, the animals also get the opportunity to execute dharma, which ultimately means Krishna consciousness. Dharma svanushtita pungsang vishvaksena katasu yaha notpadiyad yadiratim shrama evihi kevala. Dharma ultimately means Krishna consciousness. Everything else is useless. So that opportunity is there in human life. Therefore, it is said that prati janme janme mata pita pai Krishna guru nahi mile bhaja hoya. In every life we get a father and a mother. But we don't get the opportunity to worship, to serve Guru and Krishna in every life. So if we do, we should worship them with our full heart. This sense of loyalty to family members, that is a good quality in human society. That is always to be encouraged, even for people who are not Krishna conscious. It's better if they follow Vedic Dharma even without being Krishna conscious. But without Krishna conscious, it's all unfulfilled. So you find many demons, they follow Vedic culture also. Just like we're talking about Ravana. His son Indrajit was expert in performing yajnas. And we find that Duryodhana, his manner of thinking was in many ways completely Vedic. When he was dying, he said, "Well, I lived a good life, I performed yajnas, I gave charity to the brahmanas, I died as a kshatriya." So his way of thinking was completely Vedic, except that he didn't recognize Krishna, which means you did everything, but you missed the whole point. Vedaisya sarveraham eva vedaha. Krishna is the goal of knowledge in all the Vedas. So again, shrama eva hi kevalam. If you do everything Vedic, but you don't come to the point of Krishna consciousness, then it's one big zero. It's like, you know, cooking a big meal and making all the arrangements for a big feast, and you think, I'm going to have a wedding ceremony and a big feast, and you arrange it all, but you didn't invite anyone. And then you forgot to tell the bride and bridegroom also. In fact, you didn't even arrange a bride and bridegroom. You just made all... So it's absurd. A beautiful arrangement. But no bride, no bridegroom, no guests. The priest is there. The food is there. But no bride, no bridegroom, no wedding. So all arrangements are there, but the point is missed. Even then, to be a Vedic demon is better to be than being a non-Vedic demon. Although it could be said it's dry stool and wet stool. But we find even the Vedic demon, at least they had some faith in the Vedas, so they could be preached to on the basis of the Vedas. Although it's said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that Vedamanya Bodhaitonastic. Vedadig, what is that? Vedadig what is that? Vedadig Nastik Yavad. Bodhakayadig. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that because the Buddhists, they don't accept the Vedas, therefore they're known as Gnostic, which is sometimes translated rather inaccurately as atheist. Literally means one who doesn't have faith in the Vedas. They're not astic. They're not astic. Nastic means na astika. They don't accept. But the Mayavadis who preach the same, who pretend to be astic, accepting the Vedas, but they preach the same covered Buddhism, they're worse because they do so in the name of the Vedas. But in some ways they're better also. Culturally they're better. Intentionally or motivationally they're worse because they preach the right thing but they come to the wrong, or they bring the right evidence but they come to the wrong conclusion. It's more misleading, even worse. So again, it comes down to what's worse, dry, what's better, wet stool or dry stool? You may say dry stool is better, it doesn't smell so bad, but ultimately it's all stool. You've never, if you've lived in Chennai all your life, you've never seen dry stool. You don't even know what it is. But in the field, when the cows or the humans are passing, then within a short time after the sun comes up, then it all dries up. But you don't know in Chennai what is that, because in the cities we all commit the sin of passing stool in water. It's sinful to do so. What to speak of the sin of having a toilet within the same quarters that you live in. So, loyalty, the good quality of loyalty we see. How Bhima and Arjuna, even Bhima especially, when Yudhishthira was playing the gambling match, Bhima was furious. He didn't mind so much the kingdom and everything being gambled away, but when Draupadi was gambled away and brought into the assembly, then Bhima could hardly be constrained. And we wish, why didn't he just get up and kill Dushasana on the spot, right there and then, and killed all of them? He would have probably killed Bhishma and Dhritarashtra also for failing to stop it. And maybe Yudhishthira also. But he was restrained by Arjuna on the principle, you have to, come on, you have to follow the elder brother. So of course that was all Krishna's plan, that let the poison ferment. Let them go away for 13 years and let their anger, which is already so great, let it ferment and let there be a big battle in which all the demoniac kings of the world will be brought together, all destroyed at one point. Sometimes we ask, well, how is it that these demons can get away with being demons? They won't get away. Just their sinful activities and reactions, they're just fermenting, that's all. There will come a time when they will get their result. And the devotees will also get their result. We all will get the result. Don't think that we are practicing Krishna consciousness, we're trying to practice, but the demons are in control. The demons are not in control. Krishna's in control. But now is the time. The demons are never in control. That's their whole illusion of thinking they're in control. Ishvaroham, they think. But they're not. Kartaham, they think. I am the controller. I am the doer. But that is simply their foolishness. Krishna is always in control. They have a little time in which they think, now I'm in control. And then they become a dog. Like this Prime Minister of India, Srila Prabhupada accepted that. One Prime Minister of India, in his next life he became a dog. Why? Because in his previous life he was also a dog. He was a dog, being the Prime Minister of India, highly respected, but he was dog-like consciousness. My country, woo woo. Get out from my country. And then having sex here and there, highly respectable, Oxford University. No, not, he wasn't Oxford University, that was the president at the time. So, became a dog, and now he must be somewhere else, because dogs don't live that long. So you may think, now I'm very great, now we're in control. No, Krishna's always in control. So anyway, we're discussing here about loyalty to family members. That is a good quality in relationship with Krishna, especially Ramayana inculcates that quality of how you should follow the elder brother. Nowadays no one follows that. Mostly they don't have elder brothers because it's hum do hamare do. Yeah. So it's one boy, one girl. So you won't find Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, Shatrughna. There's only Rama and that's it, finished. No younger brothers. Or hum do hamare ek. So the idea of having brothers, that's a dead idea, old-fashioned. People don't know what it's like to have an elder brother. And even if somehow or other they forget to use the contraceptives, and I don't know, then what do they do after that? Then they have an abortion. It's so sinful. Contraceptive is as sinful as abortion. It's all sinful. One's more violent and apparently nasty, but it's the, in Shastric understanding, it's the same thing. You get the same result, that you also have to be aborted. So, even if there happen to be more brothers, they will fight. It's the normal thing in the modern age. Because everyone fights. So, the sense of loyalty, it's hardly there. Or if it's there, it's misplaced. Just like people are loyal to their guru, but they say, who is the guru? He's just some rascal. The guru is teaching them all nonsense. But they have some sense of loyalty. Oh, our guru. We can't leave our guru. The guru is a nonsense. He's not teaching Bhagavad Gita as it is. Oh, they're loyal, but again, for the wrong reason. Just the idea, we have our guru. But they don't know. The guru is supposed to be teaching them. And what does the guru teach? Now, in spiritual subject matters, here today we're talking about loyalty, but generally at the higher level, the gurus must teach detachment from this material world, which means asakta anabhishvanga putra dara grihadishu, to be unattached to family, home, children, wife, and all the rest. Krishna teaches this in Bhagavad Gita. So we have apparently contradictory streams or ways of thinking or instruction. Krishna himself, he elaborated this later on in Uddhava Gita. Krishna himself, he's a real family man. He has 16,108 wives, 10 sons by every wife and one daughter by every wife also. So that's a lot of children. We can see that Krishna was also utilizing family planning, because he had exactly 10 sons and exactly one daughter by every wife. That means he's still Hrishikesha. He's just indulging. Not exactly for Krishna, it's not indulging, but he's just approaching his wives exactly the number of times required for producing children. So, Krishna, when he was about to leave all of this, about to leave the world, then he instructed Uddhava. And more elaborately than he did Arjuna, with teaching Arjuna there was only a short time, but teaching Uddhava there was a longer time. So Krishna taught Uddhava many topics, among which detachment was prominent. Krishna told the story, it starts off nice, but it ends not nice. Short story of the pigeons. How there was Kapota and Kapoti, Mr. Pigeon and Mrs. Pigeon. And they loved each other. Mr. Pigeon was charmed by the movements, the very feminine movements of Mrs. Pigeon, and the way she would cuckoo, very sweetly call out to him, and she would look at him and blink her eyes, and Mr. Pigeon was completely charmed. Beautiful colors of her feathers, and they made a lover's nest. Of course, pigeons don't make much of a nest, but they may pull a few twigs together. And in due course of time, Mrs. Pigeon became expecting, and then she delivered. Of course, birds, they're also dvija, twice born. If you think I'm dvija, you can, and you're very proud of that, you can also think the pigeons are also twice born, because they get born once as, they come out once as eggs, and then again they have to come out of the egg. So they're also twice born. Yeah, it's, I didn't make it up. This is Sanskrit. Another dvija is the tooth, because it comes once and then again. So, then the little kapotikas, little baby pigeons were born, and tick, tick, tick. They're very charming, and Mr. Pigeon and Mrs. Pigeon took great delight in going around the forest and foraging for little worms and bugs and other things to come back and drop in the mouth of the little pigeonettes. So they were very happy family. Mr. Pigeon, Mrs. Pigeon, the purpose of their birth as a pigeon was completely fulfilled. They were completely satisfied with their darling little pigeons who loved them. And they loved all the little worms they brought back for them to eat. So one day, in this idyllic life in the forest, a hunter came and spread his net, into which Mrs. Pigeon, who was out looking for the best worms, she fell and was captured by the hunter close to her nest. And Mr. Pigeon was out. He'd gone a long way looking for the... He'd heard the very best worms are on the other side of the forest. So he'd gone a long way off. And the little pigeons, they were strong enough now to just pull themselves up. And they pulled themselves up to the edge of the nest. What's going on? We didn't get any food for a long time. And they all fell into the nest also. So it's becoming a bigger disaster. So when Mr. Pigeon came back, he flew to the nest and he saw it's all empty. What's going on? And then he heard the pathetic sounds. He recognized the voice, but instead of the happy sound of the delighted little pigeons calling out, when the Mr. Pigeon and Mrs. Pigeon came back, instead of the delighted sounds of about to receive their worms and bugs to eat, they heard the pathetic sound of calling in distress. And Mr. Pigeon looked down and saw the hunter with his net spread and his darling wife and darling children all caught in the net with no hope of escape. And he fainted and fell in the net. And the hunter thought, Siddharth, his purpose revealed, his purpose fulfilled. He's also called Siddharth in Bhagavatam, because his purpose was fulfilled of catching the pigeons. He wrapped them all up in his net and went home. And what happened to the pigeons at his home is not described, but you can imagine. They all became pigeon soup and landed in the belly of the hunter and his wife. Or maybe they were sold, I don't know. Whatever it was a sad ending to the story. Generally, in stories in Vedic culture, it's a happy ending. It may be... and there may be ups and downs and difficulties, but it should end happily. Madhurena samapayat. Everything should end sweetly. But this story did not end sweetly. Why is that? Well, because the real world is not very sweet. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, when he told this story, he told it a little differently to Krishna's version. He said, Mr. Pigeon coming back, he saw my family is now finished, so he took sannyas. And that is the purpose of telling the story. To point out that our hopes in this world will always be dashed. There's no happiness in family life because it will all ultimately be destroyed. So why place our hopes for happiness there? That is the purpose of Krishna telling this story, this sad story, which of course has been played out many times in the many histories of the many universes in various ways. It may not be a pigeon, the pigeons, or it may be humans, how you're living at home happily and then one day some robbers come and kill everyone. This kind of... It's going on. Day after, you just have a look at the newspaper. Newspaper means all the news. News means bad news. The only good news is the sports news. If your team, the team that you decide you support, like Chennai Super Kings, if they win, if the so-called cricket team, because cricket team, it's all just some imagine, it's some idea someone made up that if you throw a ball and hit it with a piece of wood better than other people hit the ball with a piece of wood, then you win. But it's all just some imagination, just some confabulation. So if your team wins, there's something good. Otherwise, where's the good? Even the political party you support gets elected, but they let you down. They cheat you. So, and anyway, it's all bad news in the end because everyone dies anyway. The news is how someone made someone else die quicker than they would have done if it hadn't been for the help of the other person. Just like, for instance, American and other nations' forces in Afghanistan are helping many people in Afghanistan die quicker than they would if it hadn't been for the help of the armed forces of Britain, America, and other countries, who kill them with the idea that, well, if we don't kill you, you'll kill us. But ultimately, everyone is killed by time. Time means that which destroys. So why have family loyalty? We have on one side the Vedic literature teaching us family loyalty, and on the other side we have the story of the pigeons, which shows that what is this family affection anyway? What's the use? What's the point? We are like, these are all Shastric examples, that we are like the coming together of family. It's like people who, they come together in a hotel, in a lodging. Different people come together. Different people, that in Chennai, one businessman may come from Vellore, another man may come from Nellore, another man may come from Coimbatore. And after the day's work, they all come to the same hotel in the evening, and they meet each other and they say, oh, hello, how are you? Where are you from? And they're friendly with each other. And they go to sleep, and next morning they do their work and they go back to where they're going. So they become friendly, but they don't become very friendly, because unless they have swapped some business contacts or something like this. But because they know, well, anyway, we're just seeing them now, and tomorrow we won't see them anymore. This example is given in the Bhagavatam, 5th canto. So why be attached to family? It's just like that. It's just, we come together for a short time and then again detach. So both these understandings are there in Shastra. There should be family loyalty, but then what's the use? Why be attached to family? Because everything is temporary. So both things are taught. So family loyalty has its usefulness for the short time that we're here in this world, in one particular birth, if that family is Krishna conscious. And even if not, then it, some sense of family loyalty and duty, that makes life in this world somewhat livable, more civilized. Otherwise, we may be living like certain kinds of snakes. They eat their own offspring. Certain kind of fish, like guppies, they're called guppies in English. They eat their own offspring. They'll have so many, they'll lay so many eggs, and then naturally, they're also dvija. Fish are also dvija. Mosquitoes, they're also. So, they have so many offspring, and they eat many of them. They eat their own children. So, of course, people eating their own children isn't very common in human society. Although Srila Prabhupada said, as Kali Yuga progresses, it might become common. We don't know how bad things can get. Things are getting worse day by day, but there's worse to come yet. Don't come back. Go back to Godhead now. So family loyalty has its usefulness, and If the family is Krishna conscious, then that's very good. Otherwise, there should be detachment. But because not everyone's ready for full detachment, then Grihastha Ashram is there, in which family duties should be performed, but with the understanding that my real duty is to Krishna. And this present family, that is temporary, but our real family is Krishna's family. Krishna shangshar karo charyanacha. Krishna mata, Krishna pita, Krishna dharmasha. Our real family is in Krishna's family. So we should consider ourselves part of Krishna's family and give up all wrong behavior, which we might do if we think that this mundane family is my actual family. We should know that Krishna is our mother, Krishna is our father, Krishna is the essence of all dharma, including so-called family dharma. So both these things are taught. Which is most essential? Attachment or detachment? What do you think? Attachment or detachment? Attachment to Krishna. Ultimately, the Vedas don't teach us attachment or detachment to anything material, but attachment to Krishna. But attachment to Krishna means that there will be detachment from that which is material, but then again, not detachment, because we see that everything is Krishna's. So everything should be used for Krishna's service. So Arjuna, Krishna was trying to explain all this to Arjuna about detachment. And Arjuna, he couldn't get the point. Arjuna thought that, well, I want to be a sannyasi. And Krishna told Arjuna that, who is a real sannyasi? That anashrita karma palam karyam karma karoti yaha sasannyasi ca yogisa nani ragnena chakriya. Real sannyas is internal, not external. One may renounce the world formally, but be mithyachara. He may be externally renounced, but internally attached. The one who performs his duty without being attached, he's the real sannyasi, Krishna says. Sasannyasi cha yogi cha. And then who is the best yogi? The devotee of Krishna. Yogi nam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yoma same yukta tamo mataha. So the best is to be a devotee of Krishna. So then why do we discuss all these topics of detachment? Why so much? Why does Krishna discuss this in Bhagavad Gita? Because our material attachments are very strong. And we can say, well, we'll just be attached to Krishna. But practically we are attached to this material world and everything in it. So that underlying attachment to this world is from which everything, all these anarthas, that which is not in our real interest, that all springs from mundane desire. Atendriya priti vancha tare bale kam, Krishnendriya priti vancha dhare prema nama. Krishnendriya priti icha, same thing. So, attachment or desire for our own sensual fulfillment, that is material lust. And just the opposite of that is prem. That is the definition of prem, to desire Krishna's happiness. But we are shackled by material desires. So therefore we should learn, we have to hear how material desire is not in our self-interest. We have to know that. If we just say, well, we'll just do bhakti, but we don't cultivate a sense of detachment from this world, we don't understand how bad this world is. What happens if we think we'll just do bhakti without understanding Bhagavad Gita, And the message of Bhagavatam, the forest of material enjoyment. We don't just jump from being materially conditioned to completely spiritually pure in Krishna consciousness. It doesn't happen. So we have to learn the lessons that Krishna has kindly given us in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and not misunderstand that because attachment to Krishna in bhakti is the ultimate, therefore we do not have to cultivate a sense of detachment from this world. Detachment from this world, or detachment from the sense of enjoying this world, that is not the ultimate. In fact, Shukadeva at the end of Bhagavatam says that actually all this stuff, all these stories of kings and all this, that's not so very important. I've just stated that to inculcate a sense of detachment, but that's not in and of itself the actual message. Of course, within the stories of the kings, we find many great personalities also, who are great devotees. We find that the both in the Surya Vamsa and Chandra Vamsa, even prior to the appearance of Rama and even prior to the appearance of Krishna, there are many great devotees. So even to say their names is purified. Therefore we have so many names are enlisted. So even to say these names in Bhagavatam is very purified. They're great devotees. There's Raghu and Dilip and Angshuman and so many. They're mentioned in the Surya Vamsa and Chandra Vamsa. Of course, there are many demons there also we find in Krishna's own family there's so many demons. Krishna killed Kamsa. He's also son of Ugrasen. Who Krishna lived with Ugrasen in Dwaraka. Ugrasen, we say Dwarakadish, Krishna, but formerly the king was Ugrasen. Not formally previously, but officially. The king was Ugrasen. Krishna killed his son because his son was a demon. One son was a demon. So the point is attachment to Krishna, but detachment is also required. Attachment to Krishna's devotees is also required. So all these, loyalty to family, that is required. We should understand the whole Vedic purpose to teach us first to be human, to live as human beings. Then we can come to the point of Brahma Jignasa. Otherwise, if we're living like animals in Tamaguna, then the question, the higher thoughts will not come. In Tamaguna, we're not concerned about anything, just like animals. In Rajaguna, we're concerned with sense enjoyment. In the higher levels of Rajaguna, there is conception of nobility and duty. But it's only when we come to Sattvaguna, then Brahma Jignasa, that arises. What is Brahma? Kim tad Brahma? Kim adhyatma? This question arises. Arjuna didn't ask that at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. He just said, shall I kill or shall I not kill? He didn't ask about karma, adhyatma, adiyagya, all these things. But Krishna brought him to the level of asking these questions. So we should come to that level of asking these important... What is the ultimate reality? Kasmin vigyate sarvametam vigyatam bhavati. What is that knowledge by knowing which everything will be known? These are questions that humans can ask. The Vedas bring us to the point of asking these questions and they give us the answer. But above even that question, what is that knowledge by knowing which everything will be known? There is the question. Who is it by loving whom we will love everyone? Who is that person who we should love? Love is higher than knowledge. But in this mundane world, everyone is looking for love but frustrated. And then they invent this philosophy. It's like this existentialism or impersonalism. They can't work it out. It seems absurd. We want to love. Love is very good. I have my beautiful wife, Mrs. Pigeon, and my beautiful children. All my beautiful, and it's so nice and wonderful, and we're feeding them with nice worms. Of course, they don't think that the worm also has his Mrs. Worm. They don't think about that. That's why the hunter catches them, throws him in his net. The hunter is like them in the lower modes of nature, no more than an animal. Therefore, he'll kill others for his own satisfaction. So, when we become more advanced, we think, what is this? We want to be happy, everything's nice, but the result is Pariname Vishamiva. We think it's like nectar, this love, but it all becomes poison. And then no love. Finish it all, no love. The ultimate is impersonal. No love, no personality. So, going beyond simply the quest for knowing what is the highest truth with the attachment not to enjoying this world, but attachment to negating this world. That has to be transcended also. Therefore, vita raga bhaya krodha manmaya mamuparashita bhava gyana tapasabha puta madbhavagitaha. Being freed from attachment, fear and anger with mind attached to me. Being purified of by knowledge and austerity, or being purified from that. Many persons came to me. So you may think, well, how, if your mind is attached to Krishna, then again you're going to, if your mind is attached to anything, then you're going to have vita raga, and automatically attachment is there, fear and anger, because this all comes from attachment. But Krishna says, with mind attached to me, which means that attachment to Krishna transcends the attachment, fear and anger of this world. Well, that fear is fear of mundane love. That therefore, impersonal. That anger is anger. I was a good pigeon. I did my duty. And the hunter took my wife and children. So that proves that there's no God. I always believed there was the God, the big pigeon in the sky, and then in the sky higher than we fly in the sky. But there's a big pigeon, and he makes all the little pigeons like us. It's only pigeons. God's a pigeon, right? And other living beings, they don't have souls. Only pigeons have souls. This is the Christian idea. God's some kind of human, and only the humans have souls. So the pigeon God, He makes more and more pigeons. And those who believe in him, they go to pigeon loka. And those that don't, they go to hell. So, I believed in God. You see, I offered all my worms to him before eating them. But in the end, my family is trapped. So, I won't believe in God anymore. So, being freed of this, being attached to Krishna, then we can go to Krishna. So there are a few points. Any questions about this? No questions. No pigeons. Pigeons don't ask questions. Humans ask questions. In Prabhupada's version of the story, the pigeon was intelligent. Took sannyas. Frustrated sannyasi. Should have taken sannyas before, then he wouldn't have had to suffer. Then, you want to ask a question? Yeah, so I already asked for questions, so. Somewhat nervously asking a question.
Christian and Islamic religions, are they non-Vedic?
Are the Christian and Islamic religions non-Vedic? Yes. That's the simple answer. You could say in any knowledge system there's some reflection of the Vedas. But they're not Vedic in the strict sense of the term. They don't accept the Vedas. So in that sense, they could also be called Gnostic. Vedna manya bodhaita Gnostic. The Buddhists are called Gnostic, not because they're core philosophy doesn't recognize any God. Buddha didn't speak about God, neither positively or negatively. But because they don't accept the Vedas. So in that way you could say Christians and Muslims are also Gnostic. They're non-Vedic. That's clear. Neither they will accept to be Vedic, nor will the followers of the Vedas accept them to be Vedic. In an indirect way, you could say that they mixed up with many misconceptions. They do have some right ideas. Anything else? So, Hare Krishna, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai. Hare Krishna.